Blog Talk Radio.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back to thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, wake up. A new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. The world won't get no better if we just let it be. Na 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 na. We gotta change it, just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. But they don't have so very long before their judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away? Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out, they do it every time. The world won't get no better if we just let it be. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it, just you and me.
That's right, we got to change this world, you and me. The world will not get any better. We just can't let it be. We agree with you, Brother Teddy, and we'd like to welcome our listening audience to Missing Pages of History. We invite you today to a dialogue on This Is America. That's right. Our dialogue, central dialogue today is on the theme, This Is America. We will discuss the recent video by Donna Glover, and we would like to know what is your top issue of the day. What is your top issue today? We'd like to extend a greeting, a welcome, a get well message to our contributor, a historian, and one of our members, Emmanuel. He is not feeling well. He's under the weather. We wish him a speedy recovery, but he will be back soon. And we will continue our discussion, that series on today's capitalism was born in slavery. But at this point in time, what we're going to do today, we're going to discuss the theme, This Is America. And we'd like to know, what is your top issue of the day? We'd like to have a dialogue with you. This is going to be basically an open dialogue. We want you to fill in your missing pages of history today. Right now, what I'd like to do is invite one of our members, Susie, to Missing Pages of History. Susie, welcome to Missing Pages of History.
Good evening. What I'd like to discuss, because this is America, when you think about the news media and social media, when you look back years ago when a lot of the negative events that's happening in the different cities and towns and everything, the fact that if we didn't have social media, would we didn't have social media, then we wouldn't find ourselves getting so uptight and disillusioned with all the things that's going on the way they are treating certain people, especially people of African descent. And I was just wondering, I know the media basically, their job is to do 90-95% of bad news versus that 5 or 10% of positive news. But what can we do in a way to change social media that there's more positive than a lot of this negative news and events that we see happening all over the country?
Susan, you raise a very interesting point. We're going to open up that topic to our listening audience. We'd like for you to call in at 818-337-0016. We'd like to hear your views, your perspectives on this issue and others. But Susan, before we go to your issue about the media and the abundance of media and whether it's positive or negative, I would like to hear your perspective on a central theme today. This is America. We talk about a video that was done by Danny Glover, where he displayed a real interesting characterization of America. Now, what is your take? It has gone viral. Over 60 million people more have viewed that particular video around the world. It has created all discussion on the reality of America. What is America? So, Susie, I'd like to hear your views, and we'll open up our line to our listening callers. If you'd like to make a comment, please hit 1 and dial 818-337-0016. So, Susie, what is your view on this particular video, This is America, by Danny Glover? Donna Glover.
I think Mr. Glover did a good idea of his video, put it out there, even though it was done in an artistic form. But the thing about it, once you look at it, it begins to make you think. And maybe some people really just don't realize how bad things really is for us. But he puts the image out there, and he deals with it in various ways, which will make you think. And it also it's a learning tool that basically you don't want to find yourself in a situation that basically is going to end up not positive. So he deals with like about 4 or 5 issues actually in his video. One is the gun violence. Then is one that, you know, how we actually accept the stuff happening by looking at it and not doing anything, being afraid of certain people that we feel like we got to run away. So those are just basic 3 things that I picked out of the video.
Do you find his presentation of the video a reflection of America, or is it overreach or overemphasizes or more dramatic in reality?
I think it's the reality of America, and not only America, it's other countries and stuff that I believe is even going on, but even more so because of the fact with the last election and the individual in the White House and what he puts out there that's okay for people. So therefore, it does a good version of what America is like. That is America, what Mr. Glover put out.
So you raised another point in terms of the tone administration can set and cause people to respond in certain ways. Stay right there, Susie. We got someone from the audience calling in. We'd like to get the perspective of what do you think about the video, This is America. We can go to caller 6029. Caller 6029, welcome to Missing Page of History. What is your perspective on this question of This is America?
Yeah, well, I think in terms of art, he did a very good job in terms of capturing the mood and sentiment, as well as political reality in terms of America. One of the things I found very, very, very interesting is that one of the central themes of the video was, you know, while all this chaos is going on, we have all this destruction and violence, we have a community, but specifically African community who are preoccupied with singing and dancing, despite all this chaos around them. So there seems to be he seems to be making this inference in terms of the kind of apathy that exists in African community when it comes to the overall situation impacts on the African community. So we talk about stuff like, you know, police killings, mass incarceration, people don't have access to food, infant mortality rates hitting the roof in terms of African community. We have these myriad of problems, but it seems that our solution always been to sing and dance as opposed to objectively confront the situations as they exist. And I just have to say that historically, you always had that segment of the African community who struggle against injustices. But the problem is that you got too many in the African community who resign themselves to the notion in terms of, you know, merely dismissing social reality or political reality to the extent that they undermine their own self-interest by not even engaging in situations that impact their community. So I think the video does a very good job in terms of capturing that sentiment. One other thing, also, I think when you look at the video, specifically when you talk about the choir singing, the choir was singing about get that money, make that money. Well, that is very, very interesting in terms of, you know, a choir. Now, when you think about spirituality, one of the things you talk about is those dangers tend to uplift. The problem is that when you overemphasize money, when money becomes a central emphasis of the church, then realistically you can't do anything in terms of uplifting people spiritually because the focus really is not spirituality. It focuses on making money. And so, therefore, there's a kind of legitimacy when it comes to dollars and cents that exists in the African community, particularly the church, which I think we have to address. Of course, there are people like Dr. James Cone, the father of black liberation theology, who understood the contradiction in terms of that kind of sentiment. But nonetheless, we got many in the churches who praise money over everything else. And so, therefore, the social ills that impact their communities, they impact humanity generally, is not a concern of theirs, but their focus is solely on making money or getting money. So I think that the video sort of captures that contradiction, and I think it's high time we have a discussion in the African community around these kind of contradictions.
Okay, Carl, I want you to hold on. We're going to continue to have this dialogue. This is an open discussion to our listening audience. We're going to discuss this issue of this recent video, This is America, as well as what is some of the major ideas or topics of the day for you. And right now, we're going to take this other caller. We're going to bring in caller 3330. We're going to bring in caller 3330. Welcome to Missing Pages. What is your views? What are your views and your perspectives on this video, caller 3330?
I feel that what Mr. Glover did in terms of the video is a very good approach in terms of really getting young people to pay attention to the issues at hand. Because if you notice, he did it in the style of hip-hop that's very popular today, which many people term mumble rap. So you notice he incorporated those elements, but yet he was very careful to make it clear when he was articulating the different conditions and issues that we're facing in the society today.
Okay. Now, Carla, is there anything in the video stood out the most that caught your attention when you first saw it?
One thing that was interesting, I would say, is the landscape in which he was doing the video, because it was very dismal, a very sullen environment in terms of he was composing the video. So I'm wondering if he's saying that that's the backdrop of the society we find ourselves in terms of the conditions that are at hand. So that was very interesting in terms of the backdrop and how that serves as a canvas for the overall video.
Hey, caller, you hold on, stay on. We're going to bring in our next caller. We'd like to welcome caller 4298. We'd like to welcome caller 4298. What's your take on This is America video, caller?
Unfortunately, I have not been able to see this video yet, so I don't want to comment on something I haven't investigated. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Carl. We'll put you on hold and bring you back in. Okay, what we're doing right now, this is Missing Pages of History. We are taking people's perspectives on this whole question of this recent video that has gone viral. Yeah, so far, over 60 million people have viewed it. Is raising a dialogue about the nature of America, a dialogue on violence, a dialogue on race. It has raised issues of all kind of issues that are taking place in America. We do recognize many of these issues are not just uniquely to America, but we recognize that they also happen in other countries. But in this case, we're speaking to America, because that's what the video was addressing. So right now, for those that made their comments on this particular video, I'd like to raise the question that one of our members earlier, Susan, raised around the question of the media. Do we think we have too much, we have too much access to the media, we see too much, as a result of it, is causing us to act in a way that more negative than positive? Caller 6029, what do you say to about the role of this overhype or this abundance of media and how it may or may not be influencing the behavior of people in general in this country and around the world?
Yeah, well, there's no question about it. I mean, media does impact on the way people feel. To some extent, it impacts on their perception. The thing we have to understand, that when we talk about the images coming out of the media, those images are not the product of the people. Their images are the product of corporate America, and corporations determine what in fact what is feasible and what is not. I think social media understands this discrepancy and seeks to remedy the situation by showing that news in which is ordinarily people are not privy to. I think the news that social media presents is very important because it shows the underside of society. See, often what happens is that given the overall malaise in terms of propaganda, in terms of impact on people, people are not privy to or aware that a lot of things are actually existing. Policies are changed, laws are changed, but often not privy to that. But nonetheless, we feel the impact, but we just don't understand the nature of the impact. Well, social media sort of brings to the surface exactly, you know, what these policy and law changes actually mean to our lives. So I think social media is very important in terms of waking up to the cold reality in terms of what precisely is going on. Because let's take, for example, we look at police brutality. Right, one of the things that people say, well, you know, the reason why police brutality exists because people out there doing wrong. Well, I think social media has been able to sort of dismiss, you know, that fallacious lie by showing people that, in fact, that oftentimes people are not doing anything and they're brutalized or killed by the police. And so, therefore, then it raises the question in terms of, well, then what we're talking about effectively, we're talking about a system in place which is geared toward the oppression specifically of African people, African and poor people. So, therefore, you know, without social media, we would never understand that message because the corporate media will never present the reality in terms of the systemic oppression that impacts African people. So social media is very important in terms of showing us the underside, showing us in terms of the reality, in terms of what it is to be America and what America is all about. And as we live in a society where increasingly the disparity between the have and have-not grows leaps and bounds, then clearly there's a lot of people in society, particularly poor and working-class people, as far as the ruling class is concerned, existence is esoteric. In other words, they're finding unique ways in terms of getting rid of all those people that they feel like a drain on the economy. So this is a real danger that we are confronted with. And so without social media to sort of push us toward that reality, we tend to believe the corporate narrative that everything is fine. So social media has its place and is very, very important.
Okay, let's get a perspective from caller 3330. Do you think there's too much media, there's too much hype, there's too much information that is having a negative impact on the people in general? Caller 3330.
Well, there is an oversaturation of certain types of media because we got to understand a lot of what we're going to see in social media and mainstream media is going to be of the bubblegum variety, which means it's flavor of the month, meaning that it's supposed to be quick, it's supposed to be temporary, it doesn't have any real substance to it. I find it very interesting that people come up with these new forms of popular media that are easily accessible. You don't see them offer ways to really get content that you can think about, reflect on, and really help to change those issues that we're impacted with on a daily basis.
Okay. Let's go to caller 4298. Caller, your response to the question.
I just wanted to add one more thing.
Let's go ahead,
caller. It's safe to say that, especially in U.S. society, that entertainment is one of the opiates of the masses.
Can you break that down just a little bit before I listen to when you say opiate of the masses? What you mean by that, caller?
Opiate of the masses is a phrase used to describe that which is easily accessible and used as a means of keeping people distracted from the more important issues. It's something that you can easily take part in on a regular basis and it becomes a big distraction for you. And you lose a certain sense of reality and you become just connected to what that which is quick, easy, and it feels good, but not necessarily going to really get you to reflect on what's really going on in society and how can I make it better.
Thank you, caller. Okay, let's go to caller 4298. Your response to the media issue, caller.
Right. I think, you know, that the media, the social media is pointing out the contradictions within the social order and is sensitizing the viewer to the issues of the day, basically, and that, you know, for instance, police brutality and the innocent people who are victimized by police brutality. The more we have of that, the more we can sensitize the society to that issue, and because, you know, it hasn't been a focal point of corporate media or anything, and we do need to a more sensitive social order that is conscious of the real problems of that particularly third world African people face. And so I think it's you know, I think we need more of the social media pointing out the so-called negative, but to me it's a positive thing that needs to be pointed out. Thank you.
You know, as we look at this media, This Is America, I see there's some interesting responses from European Americans. Why is it there's a large response from the European America? Some are outraged, some act as if they've never seen it before, some saying it's acceptable because this is reality. So from your perspective, when you listen and look at Europeans, when they look at this video, they seem to have a different take on it. Can you explain that phenomenon, caller 6029? Let's go caller 6029 first. 6029.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I think to a large extent their perception is shaped by self-interest. When I say that, we have to understand that if you're doing well in society, there's certainly no impetus in terms of really critiquing the society at large. In fact, you're more likely to blame the victims as opposed to understand the systemic abuses that create the problems in the first place. So I think it's a class issue to some extent. So I think when we talk about the white community in terms of the lot of apathy that exists, the same apathy exists among a lot of African people who happen to have access to wealth. So we have to understand the class dimension in terms of shaping one's perception. And by and large, also have a situation where, but given the divisive nature of the society, that people with wealth tend to live way away from people who don't possess wealth. And so therefore, their perception may be totally different in terms of those individuals who actually live in the midst of cities, who actually see these injustices firsthand. So I think that a lot of it has to do with the fact that we're talking about a complicit kind of ignorancy that exists among, particularly when we talk about certain classes of people. And when we specifically talk about white folks, then I think we have to understand that when we're talking about wealthy white folks, then it's certainly not in their interest to deal with reality. It's much easier for them to blame the victims. Because after all, if they were to adequately deconstruct what's going on, then they have to conclude that not only do they benefit from the injustice of the society, but they have a vested interest in terms of participating in injustice effect against people throughout the society. So I think it's a vested interest not to want to know. So I think that is essentially what the problem is.
Caller 3330, your response to that question.
Well, we got to understand that when it comes to those forces or institutions in their own right that are criticizing that particular video, to understand it's not in their economic interest to have people offering criticisms of those things they do to create the society to be the way, because we got to understand these are the people who are invested in private prisons. These are the people that have created the overly inflated defense budget. These are the people who inadequately fund education. These are the people who inadequately come up with initiatives to make sure that the environment is healthy for everybody.
And Susie, what will be your response based on the response you heard from European and white community to the video? Why their responses so much seem a little different from responses of the African community and underserved communities?
I think their response is different because of the fact they realize a lot of things that go on, but to actually see someone put it out in the art form that it did, it somewhat angers them, I think, because of the fact they really don't want us to see, and they know through the form of art that you can get a lot of messages out through art, and I don't think they particularly care for the fact that it was done in that particular medium.
So what I hear you saying, Susie, art is an easy way to express ourselves and make certain legitimate points where there'll be less repercussion than coming right out and tickling it. Is that what you're saying, Susie?
Yes.
Carlos 6029, do you agree with their perspective?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Does art serve as a means of where African people can express themselves and don't have to worry about a greater resistance from the rest of the public because it is art versus speaking straight truth to power when it comes to injustice in this country?
Yeah, art is one of the few ways actually we can get a message across. The point is that because art is abstract, it's not easy for those in position of power to attack it because it's abstract. And so therefore, in that sense, that you can get a message across without fear in terms of, you know, being vilified. I think that, for instance, there's a man by the name of Wahome Matahi. He's writes a cartoon out of Kenya, East Africa. And he deals with a lot of the governmental injustices. But he uses comedy to get the message across. And as long as he does that, he's protected. Now, Wahome is currently, he's dead. But during the time he was living, he used the comedy in terms of, you know, conveying essential messages, you know, without fear of some type of retribution from government. The same is true in America. I think one of the things that, when you're talking to people, one of the things if you hit home too hard in terms of reality, you really anger people. And so therefore you leave yourself vulnerable in terms of all kind of attacks. Because the way in which the message was conveyed. Well, art allows you to convey a message which is in a way which is certainly less threatening. It allows them less threatening, they're less likely to attack you. Because if they would attack you, it would be perceived as though there's something wrong with the attacker as opposed to the message that's being perpetuated. So I think that art is one of the truly only ways in terms of being able to express, you know, real injustices, you know, without the backlash.
Okay, let's get our lab response before we go to our station break. Caller 3330, your response, caller. Your response to this question, art is a cover to speak truth to power. Go ahead, caller 3330.
I would definitely agree with the assessment, and I'll use a recent example. Now, I'm sure most of us on the program are familiar with the highly influential comic strip, The Boondocks. The Boondocks, before it was a popular TV series, started off as an influential comic strip, which was very critical about things in terms of black society as well as U.S. society in general. And what the creator, Aaron McGruder, was careful to do was use satire as a means of getting his commentary out. But once more mainstream newspapers that were carrying the comic strip realized what he was doing through art, they had very sneaky means of trying to limit the influence, such as either they would take it out or they moved it to a section where most people wouldn't read. In lieu of being in the general comics, they would move it to the political opinion and editorial section as a way of trying to stymie what this brother was sharing in terms of what he had to say about society.
All right. To our listening audience, this is Missing Pages of History. Today we're doing a program with the central theme is around the question of This Is America. We are discussing this recent video that recently was released that has been seen over 60 million people is doing a critique of America. And we'd like to hear your views, your comments on that, as well as other issues. We'd like to know, what is your major theme or your major issue or event for this week? We also will talk a little bit about Mother Day. We'd like to wish everyone mothers a happy Mother Day. Mother Day is this Sunday. That's tomorrow. And one of our questions we'd like for you to ask, that we would ask, and we'd like for you to respond to is, what is the best gift you can give your mother? What is the best gift that you can give your mother, or what is the best memory that you may have of your mother? We're going to take the station break. We'll be right back. Continue discussion. This is Missing Pages of History.
One would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? How long have you hated your white teacher? Who told you you loved your black preacher? Do you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? People must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation
would make a better society. Now some of us would rather cuss and make a fuss than to bring about a little trust. But we shall overcome, I believe, someday, if you'll only listen to what I have to say.
And how long have you had your white teacher?
Who told you you love your black preacher? Can you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? I say now people must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more
and love for our nation
would make a better society. And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? If you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers?
We'd like to welcome you back to Missing Pages of History. And this song raises a very critical question at this point in time of this country's historical development. We're talking about the influence of mass media. We're talking about the history of people struggling to make humanity better. We're talking about the various contradictions that exist in society. I would like to ask each of my participants and those who are listening to call in, I'd like for y'all to briefly respond to that song. If you was given a choice of color, all the colors that exist, what would be your primary, your main color that you would choose? We'll go to Susie. We'd like for you to respond. If you had a choice of color, which one would you choose?
Well,
I choose the dark. First of all, I think we are, as dark people, we are some of the best people in the world. We got compassion, we got humanity, and things like that. So naturally, and then I don't know no other thing than to be what I am, and that is to be of dark pigmentation, which is beautiful in my work.
Which one would you choose to be right? And which one would you choose that would not be right? Is that the answer, right color, Susie?
Well, really, I don't think there really is anything such as a right color. But the thing of it is, when you think about how this world came about and everything and stuff, it was the darker people basically that started this world. We the ones that carried on a lot of the responsibilities and everything for this world. So far as being the right color, it has to be dark.
All right. Interesting perspective. We're going to go to the next caller. For those who have just joined us, this is Missing Page of History. Our central thing is we're having a discussion around this video that was produced by Donald Glover called This Is America. We'd like to hear your views and perspective on this video, as well as what are some of the central events or things that took place this week for you. But also, we're going to talk a little bit, too, about Mother Day. We wish everyone a happy Mother Day, and two of the questions we'd like to ask you is that, one, what is the best gift you can give your mother? And two, what is the best memory that you may have of your mother if they have made that transition? So right now, I go to caller number 6029. First, if you had a choice of color, which one would you choose, my caller? 6029?
Well, if I had a choice of color? Well,
yes.
You know, the bottom line, I think, is that there's only one real color. And when we talk genetics, the dominant color is dark, is black. And so, therefore, when we talk about which color would you choose, I'm sort of confused in terms of what that really means. In the context of contemporary American society, of course, they want us to believe that, in fact, you know, colors are, in fact, unique and distinct. In fact, you and I understand that when you talk about color, it's a bit misleading. Because when you talk about color, you talk about all your human beings. It all goes right back to Africa. So everybody have African blood. And beneath the exterior, beneath that phenotype, that physical look what they look like, the African essence exists. And so, therefore, when you ask which color would you prefer, well, then the only correct answer could be dark, because this is the essence of light. I mean, so we talk about all human beings, and we got to go right back to Africa. And so, for those of us who understand that fundamental reality, we don't get deceived, you know, by notions in terms of, you know, color as some type of biological determinant. We understand that color has nothing to do in terms of who you are genetically. So when we talk about genetics, we're very clear that we're talking about, you know, African origin. So dark would be the preferable color.
Okay, let's go to caller 3330. Caller 3330, if you had a choice of color, which one would you choose, my caller?
The dark hue is what I choose. There's strength, legacy, and a continuing influence with the darkest hue, if only others knew.
All right. Yes, that's an interesting take on that one. Let's go to caller 4298. Welcome to Missing Pages History. Caller 4298, if you had a choice of color, which one would you choose, my caller?
I'm black and I'm proud. I think, you know, it reminds me of the Bible when they said Moses would rather endure the afflictions of his people than spend a season with the privilege of the Egyptians. And I think, you know, the third world, the people of color and African people are the blessed people of this planet, and that we have not succumbed to some of the aberrations of being part of a profit-driven European vicious system of exploitation of other people. And so I definitely would enjoy being a black person and see no need to change. Thank you.
Okay, let's continue our discussion. One other thing we want to raise is this is Missing Pages of History, and we want our people to fill in those missing pages. When you look at a reflection of what took place this past week, what would be your major story event that you would think of, that you view as being the most significant? Let's start with caller 3330. Any particular stories or events that took place this week you'd like to share with our listening audience that you consider as your major event, caller? While caller 3330 is thinking, let's go to caller 9.
I'm sorry, that was a technical issue, but one important instance I wanted to lift up is that Reverend Barber from North Carolina, who we know is active with their NAACP and certain social justice causes, recently did a sermon where he spoke of just how immoral society is. And I wanted to give him kudos for lifting up a number of issues that were relevant in terms of why society is the way it is, in terms of an overly inflated defense budget and immoral people making immoral decisions from a position of power. While it didn't necessarily give the full story, at least it's good that somebody from the theological realm is willing to do as they were tasked to do, and that is speak truth to power, and not just use their theological positioning to speak the status quo as acceptable.
Okay, let's go to caller 6029. What would be your most outstanding event for this week and its significance, caller, that you'd like to share with our listening audience?
Yeah, well, I like the fact that Bernie Sanders is talking about full employment, or in other words, a right for everyone to have a job who wants one. I think that's very important. I think one of the things when we talk about the malaise and deterioration of the capitalist system, I think one of the things we have to understand is the only thing that can save socialism, I mean capitalism, is socialism. Now, of course, we have socialism already exists in various forms. For instance, when we talk about the function of interest rates, then we know interest rates is when we exchange, moving, taking money from one sector and giving it to another sector. In the case of America, it's taking money from poor people and giving it to very wealthy people. So it's a reverse kind of socialism. So clearly, Bernie Sanders is onto something, that if you create a situation where everybody inside had access to a job, then not only will you revitalize the economy, but you get an opportunity to improve the education system in terms of more money flowing through the, more revenue flowing through the coffers to ensure that you have better schools, better teachers, better salaries. So it facilitates trade, have better trade, which means more money. So across the board, if everyone had access to a job, it'd be tremendous. It'd be a big boost to the overall economy if, in fact, that happened. And also, that's the core question in terms of the multiplier effect that we have to understand. That one of the problems in terms of the system as it currently exists is that the money is given to very wealthy people in terms of tax breaks, interest rates, and so forth and so on. But they don't use the money in terms of exterminating the economy. The money doesn't go through the system. It stops right there among the wealthy who invest it for, to enrich themselves as opposed to enriching the broader society. So I think by giving everybody a job, you actually expand the possibilities in terms of money flowing into the system to make the economy expand, which means it's good for everybody. And in terms of deficits, these government deficits will come way, way down because inevitably what's going to happen is going to force people by social spending, it means that the money has to come from somewhere, which means that you have to take away from all this military and intelligence spending for the benefit of the people. So I think this kind of socialism is ideal in terms of, not only stimulating the economy, but ultimately creating a better country, a better world. So I think what he has is proposing is a very good idea. Of course, the question is whether or not it would come to fruition. The bottom line is probably not. I don't see Democrats or Republicans voting for everyone to have a job. If, in fact, everyone had a job, it wouldn't be capitalism. It'd be socialism. And those who are using the power are hell-bent on making sure that socialism never comes to America. Even if that means destroying damn near half of the population, they're committed to doing it. If it means destroying half of the world's population, they're committed to doing that. So this is the irony that we're confronted with, but the general idea is a good one, but we certainly can anticipate both Republican and Democrat being, across the board opposed to employment, full employment for the people of this country.
Let's go to Susie. Susie, what would be your outstanding or major event that took place this past week that you'd like to share with our listening audience?
Well, basically, I was going to comment on the same thing that the last caller did with Bernie Sanders, so I don't really have much more to add than what he's already said.
Okay, that's going to call 4298. Your outstanding issue for this week? Call 4298.
Yeah, I think the Bernie Sanders thing is a good issue. In terms of the overall situation here in the USA in the belly of the beast, and it would strike a good blow against the capitalist forces if he could implement that plan. I think some of the social media and the internet again at the Waffle House. This brother coming from a prom or something was attacked by police. And then this grandmother was attacked in another situation by the police, which resulted in one of the police resigning. Those are two key issues this week for me. I think we have to continue to politicize the attacks by police on our people, and so until this thing is embedded in the consciousness of the society, and there's no question that there has to be something has to be done about the social order and the police in particular. Thank you.
You know, Carl, you raised something that was very sensitive to my heart when I saw this week, particularly the attack. Not only on these young ladies in Waffle House, but the elderly. There was at least two incidents, one in Florida and one in Georgia, how the policeman came and mistreated one young lady who was, I think, was 65, another one 62. And I also asked myself, you know, these are just outright attacks with no thought given towards the implication of how they will be viewed with the rest of the world. So I also ask myself, don't seem like these police officials are doing this, seem like they're having state approval to act in this capacity. And what kind of psychological impact is it having on underserved communities, the African communities, when we see elderly people like this being brutalized by a police force in which we all pay taxes to pay them? Matter of fact, one of them left. One of them got suspended, but he got suspended with pay. So, to those who is on this line, what message is this sending to us and the rest of the world when police officers are now, look like they're not only just targeting African people in general, but even elderly African people who are very, very physically limited in terms of the kind of physical confrontations they can have with another human being? Caller, 3330. Let me hear your response first. How you feel about that?
Repeat the question, please.
How do you feel about this openly attack on elderly African women, women who are in the 60s and 70 years old? How you feel about it? What kind of impact do you think they may be having on the community and the world in general when they see this? It seems to me that behavior has been licensed and been given approval. Because these officials are
absolutely. I agree with the sentiment you're expressing, and I'm going to say that's a propaganda tactic, because a lot of times when you're trying to get certain people of a certain society to fall in line, you're going to attack the weak and most vulnerable, hoping that you get people to stand down and not speak out against what is going on. To give a perfect example, if anybody has seen the documentary The Panama Deception, what they did when they went into Panama, the first thing they did, not only did they go after people of color, but they went after people of color in areas where the military was not. You know, this was a military campaign. And that was a way to try to get the people to give in, because if everybody know one thing, you try to lessen when you're in conflict is civilian casualties. So they're hoping that if it was a certain number of civilian casualties, that those who were carrying out the mission would be able to succeed because the people would have given in. And that same kind of principle applies to these types of scenarios.
Okay, caller 6029, your response to these type of attacks on elderly African women?
Well, I think it indicates the criminalization of community. I think this perception that, in fact, that African people are the other, I think it's very, very clear. I think irrespective of your age, I don't think it really matters. I mean, that's very, very clear in terms of the treatment of these elderly women or who are no threat to anybody. So if, in fact, you know, one of the problems, you know, if, in fact, you know, they can victimize the elderly, I mean, if they're insensitive to the plight of, you know, elderly, you know, African women, then what does that mean in terms of the kind of ferocity of behavior directed toward, you know, say, a teenager or a young black man or a young black woman for that matter? So I think that first and foremost, we've got to be able to understand that because we're talking about a system, the system doesn't give a damn in terms of, you know, who oppression is directed against. It's directed against an entire community. And that community incorporates not only the elderly, but the young as well. And so, therefore, we, at some point, we have to come to the realization that given the fact that the community is under attack, then we have to organize and to prevent it from happening. Because without that, it's not going to happen. It'll continue to proliferate. And that is clear when we look at it in terms of deteriorating society. Even though the media narrative is that everything is fine, of course, the many of us understand the nature of the beast, and particularly when you look at economic statistics, that clearly the society is falling. So we can anticipate more in terms of abuse of African community. And it really doesn't matter whether you talk about the elderly or the young. So organization is the key to put a stop to this, because without that, we can anticipate more of the same.
And call a 4298, your response to this brutal attack against the elderly.
Well, you know, this is atrocious. This totally unwarranted vicious attack on people because of their color. All the only thing I can come up with, and there's no respect of age, no respect of gender, no respect whatsoever of people of color, and you know, the police is just blatantly are just totally insensitive to the needs of our community, and it's, you know, even after the woman who was stopped by the police for supposedly changing lanes or something, anyway, she was drugged from her car and she was an elderly woman, and it was just the police, even though he resigned his position, he was defending his actions. And so it's so insensitive to the needs of the community. If you're black, you just have no rights and no rights whatsoever, and they just can manhandle you and do anything they want to you, and it's supposed to be okay. Thank you.
And before we go to our station break, Susie, your response to these attacks?
You know, the sad thing about it is that these attacks are going to continue. And as far as what we can do about it, I'm not really sure. Even if we organize somebody, there's going to be somebody out there that's going to be by themselves, that's going to be confronted with a situation. But just thinking of the fact that here's Mother's Day weekend, that 65 lady and 62-year-old lady, they were the parents or mothers of some kids, even if it wasn't their biological kids, but just from the community period, and just to realize that they had to go through that. You know, it's sad, and something's got to be done, but whether or not it's going to be discontinued, I don't think so. It's going to be a continuation, and they were just too that we managed to find out about through social media.
Thank you, Susie. Right now, we're going to take a station break, and when we come back, we're going to be closing out with a tribute to Mother and Mother Day, and we want you to answer these questions. What is the best gift you can give your mother, or what is the best memory that you may have of your mother if she has made a transition? And Susan will give our listening audience an update on what's going on with MPH and how you can support us. But right now, we're going to take this station break, and we'll be right back. This is Missing Pages of History.
Tennessee.
Lord, I've really been real stressed, down and out, losing ground. Although I am black and brown, problems got me pessimistic. Brothers and sisters keep messing up. Why does it have to be so damn tough? I don't know where I can go to let these ghosts out of my skull. My grandma passed, my brother's gone. I never at once felt so alone. I know you're supposed to be my steering wheel, not just my spare tire. But Lord, I ask you to be my guiding force of truth. For some strange reason it had to be. He guided me to Tennessee. Over me. We talk to each other in a friendship way. Then out of nowhere, you tell me to break out of the country and into more country. Baptized birth into rhythm, where the ghosts are shouted on me. Walk the road my forefathers walked, climb the trees my forefathers hung from. Ask those trees for all their wisdom. They tell me my ears are so young. Go back to whence you came, my family tree, my family name. Some strange reason it had to be. He guided me to Tennessee.
Ishi, she went down to Holly Springs. Razadon and Baba, they went down to Peachtree. Headliner, I challenge you to a game of horseshoes. A game of horseshoes.
Now I see the importance of history. While my people be in the mess that they be. Many journeys to freedom made in vain by brothers on the corner playing ghetto games. I ask you, Lord, why you enlighten me without the enlightenment of all my folks. He said, cause I set myself on a quest for truth, and he was there to quench my thirst. But I am still thirsty. Lord, allow me to drink some.
We'd like to welcome you back to Missing Pages of History. The song Tennessee more typifies the importance of family. I think one of the things that has happened in society, there has been a great breakdown of the concept of family. There has been a great breakdown of the concept of we. There seems to be that we are all functioning as individuals. And we know as individuals there are very limited of things that you can do by yourself. So maybe we need to start take a closer look at start getting back together as a we, as a group. But in closing, we want to do two things right now. We want to do a tribute to all the mothers of the world. And by doing this, we're going to ask each one of our participants to either answer the question, what is the greatest gift you can give your mother for tomorrow? Or what is the greatest memory that you may have of your mother if she has made a transition? So we'll start with our member, Susie. Your response, what is the greatest gift or the greatest memory that you may have of your mother?
Okay, actually I have two. One, she used to always say, treat people the way you want to be treated. And so that was mean always putting your best you forward to anyone that you may encounter. And also the next thing that she always said, if you can't help someone, do it because it doesn't hurt you to help anyone. In the long run, you allow yourself to be good for who you are.
Wow, very powerful. Okay, caller 4298, what is the best gift you can give your mother or what's the greatest memory you have for your mother? Caller 4298.
Yes, my mother has made the transition. I do remember my mother as a bird. She was a very religious person and spent a lot of time doing her activities within the church organizations. But nevertheless, when I was working with Northern Virginians Against Apartheid back in the 80s, and I was able to because of my work with them, I was given a ticket to see Nelson Mandela when he came to town, and Winnie Mandela too, and I was able to give my mother the ticket and take her. I drove her over to the convention center, and she listened to Nelson Mandela, and that was a wonderful moment for me, because you know she was not really socially active outside of church, but she was conscious of the apartheid and the situation in South Africa, and was very concerned, and I was glad that I was able to help her see Nelson Mandela, hear Nelson Mandela. That's one of my fondest memories of my mother. Thank you.
Thank you, Carl. Carl 3330. The best gift you get your mother, the greatest memory you have of your mother. Carl 3330.
The greatest gift anybody can give their mother is to live a life of love that causes you to empower everybody you meet and be an advocate of positive change that will help everybody get to a better place.
All right, thank you, caller. And caller 6029, same question.
Well, I got to say, the fondest memory is, being a precocious little young guy, getting in trouble and getting spanked by my father, and to have my mother cook something special for me, just to get me to calm down. So that's the fondest memory I have of my mother. And, of course, the greatest contribution you can give to your mother is, just to, if she's still here, just to, hug her and let her know how much she means to you.
Thank you, caller. To our caller and listeners, we'd like to thank you for your support. We'd like to thank you for allowing us to come to your home this evening. And right now what we're going to do is we're going to give you some information in terms of how you can support MPH and some of the activities that may be coming up. So, Susie, will you share with our listening audience what's going on with MPH?
Okay. I'd like to remind our listening audience that we have our quarterly raffle fundraiser drawing on Saturday, June the 2nd at 1 o'clock. And you can go to www.blogtalkradio.com/missing-pages-of-history-inc. Or either you can call in at 818-337-0016. You do not need to be present to win. And if you like tickets, you can email us at our website at www.mphinc.org, or you can call us at 804-726-3217. And last and final, you can always email us at missingpageshistory1@yahoo.com. Okay, and I'd also like to remind the listening audience that we have our upcoming live TV program, which is held on Comcast Channel 95 and Fios Channel 36. And this will be during the fall, starting around September the 12th. And it's on Wednesdays, and it's from 9 to 10 p.m., and it's a live call-in show. And also, we have our continuing MPH T-shirt and cap drive, and you can just email us or call us or talk to one of the MPH representatives if you're interested in purchasing a T-shirt and a cap. And last and final, don't forget we have our MPH radio program, which is on Saturdays biweekly at 1 o'clock p.m., and our next one will be on May the 28th. And following 2 weeks from there, it'll be June the 9th and June the 23rd. And thank you for listening to Missing Pages of History.
And we encourage all of y'all to support us. We need to do this together. Come and join us. What I would say right now, we want to wish Emmanuel a speedy recovery. We miss you and hope that you get well soon. And we'd like to remind you, as a listening audience, that we must fill in our missing pages of history. Because it's the history is the blueprint that will produce a better and greater future, not only for us, but for all humanity. So come in and join us. Check us out. And on that note, we'll see you in 2 weeks. And we want to let you know that nothing will change, not unless you get up and stand up for your rights.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up, stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up, stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up, don't give up the fight.
Easy.